Mark Schlereth, and he's in studio for the hour with us here. Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio, live on TV on ESPN2. He's presented by Progressive Insurance. And all our guests appear on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Freshly shorn is Mark Schlereth today. Nice short haircut. I like it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So you can get away with the short hair like that. I like Golic's hair long.
I'm getting a cut today.
I don't like that. Let it grow.
No, it
so
doesn't
much
grow
better long.
It grows up in curls and waves and everything.
That's like a Brillo pad that you wash dishes with, right?
Yeah, it's exactly right.
If you get it too long, I like your hair short.
Thank you.
No,
I need to get
it
short.
I need
the thinning shears, you know, because it gets too thick.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Thin it on out.
But it's bushy.
Yeah, see, there you go.
I think it looks good. I think it de-emphasizes, you know, other things.
Like what?
See,
I'd like
to. Now the truth comes out, huh? Now you're calling me fat and ugly.
No, I'm not calling you ugly. You're not ugly at all. You're actually a handsome man. You know what you have? You're a tad jowly.
You're saying I have three chins.
No, but it de-emphasizes that when you have longer hair.
Saying I have a fat face.
You have a healthy face.
Just say it.
Face.
You know what? Tuesday, you had no problem ripping the guy from Washington for tweeting what he did.
I'm not tweeting anything. I mean, I'm helping.
No, for
you
him
out.
Tweeting what he did, you
I
ripped
understand.
Him.
But I'm saying that I think you should. I like your hair longer. I mean, I don't even know why you're making this into
a
thing.
I want my hair longer to cover up my fat face. That's fine. Can we move on now?
Okay, let's move
feelings?
On to this question.
Okay.
Golic brought this up. There's all this, and you're well aware, Mark Schlereth, that there's all this talk right now about Tony Romo. He's very much in the center of the conversation because they had the big game on Sunday night, the first game in the new building. So that's a big game for the Cowboys. And he played poorly. And Eli Manning played great, and the Giants wound up winning a close game. And when you're the quarterback of the Cowboys, this is just sort of what goes with the territory. And one of the things that is being raised, and I can't sit here and say whether it's accurate or not, but his leadership is being questioned. His talent is beyond question, right? No question. Tony Romo can run around and he can fling it about as well as anybody can. But the questions are about his decision making and about his leadership. And Golic was sort of dancing around. And I think, Mike, you sort of were convincing, as you were saying it, you were realizing, you know, maybe it makes more sense than it does on its face. And correct me if I'm misinterpreting what you were thinking. Golic was saying, well, maybe you don't have to be a great leader to be a great quarterback. But then as he was thinking it, you sort of said to yourself, you know, all the great quarterbacks have
all the
been
great
leaders.
And again, my point is you can't, because everybody talked this year about, you know, Romo needs to be the leader of the team, whoever needs to. And as I said, you can't point to somebody and say you're the leader. That can't happen. Either you're the leader or you're not. And people are emailing in, well, Ben Roethlisberger wasn't a leader when he came into the league. Eli Manning wasn't a leader. You know, that's right. They weren't the leader of their teams, but they evolved into it. And they are both leaders of their teams right now.
In fact, I think there are people who would tell you that it was Eli sort of evolving into that leadership role and maybe the absence of another guy in Tiki Barber who had sort of been the main presence in that locker room. That helped Eli develop into the quarterback he's become.
I would agree with that. And Tony Romo has not evolved. And I'm not going to sit here and say that's a bad thing. It's just what it is. He may not be a leader. And you know what? I may be rethinking the thought. You know, there are those that say Terry Bradshaw wasn't a great leader on the 4 Super Bowl team in Pittsburgh. Now, that team had a bunch of great players and a bunch of leaders. So, and I should have said that name earlier when I was thinking of that because that too jumped to mind. Terry Bradshaw, I don't think, was ever considered the great leader of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, I
think you know who's in charge.
Yes, you do.
And I think that's the biggest thing about leadership from the quarterback position. You have to be the guy in charge. And I think that's where Tony Romo has probably not elevated himself to the elite status at the quarterback position. We know he is very skilled. You know, we know he can make the plays. We know that he can run around and extend plays. We know that when he is on, the guy is an outstanding player. From the leadership standpoint, you mentioned Tiki Barber with the Giants and Eli's kind of maturation process. I'll mention Shockey leaving.
Yeah.
It really helped Eli Manning become that voice and that guy, but it took time. And now you see him as this guy. And even last year, at the end of last season when they lost Plexico, there were still questions about Eli. Now, in this game, in that last two-minute drive, the guy was exceptional. And he's got young wide receivers. Some of them are really standing up right now, like Manningham, like Smith, are really standing up, making some plays for him. But that has been an evolutionary process for Eli Manning to become that leader. And Tony Romo has got to have some type of seminal event to where he garners that kind of gravitas from his teammates, where He goes out and single-handedly wins a game in the fourth quarter. When that happens, you know, all of a sudden guys start to gravitate to you and say, man, this guy's got it. You know, there's no more of that question making. And I don't know that in a tough position, in a tough game, against the odds, Tony Romo has done that. And sometimes it has to be in one of those games where you throw two picks and you look like garbage. And all of a sudden, guess what? In that fourth quarter, with a couple minutes left, you make the plays that get you a victory. That's what it's got to be, and I don't know that that has happened for him yet, so I don't know that there's believability within his own locker room at this point.
Some will say, though, when Dallas offense left the field in that game Sunday night, they were winning, and it was Eli Manning who brought the team down on a winning drive to beat them. But I agree with you, and you, listen, you played for a great leader, John Elway. I played for one in Dan Marino. When I was in Philadelphia, Randall Cunningham was not a great leader. Randall Cunningham was not the guy everybody just stared at in the huddle and said, let's go. Jim McMahon was that, had that from Chicago, came over, and he kind of had that aura about him. But Randall did a great job at quarterback, and he certainly had some excellent years. But he wasn't, you know, in the leadership conversation we're having right now, he wasn't that either.
But if Randall could have at some point gotten you guys over the top.
Randall made some big plays.
But not but by being consistent and then, you know, going out and snatching a victory from the jaws of defeat, if he could have done that, he would have garnered kind of that, wow, Randall can really get this done for us. I mean, I think there was always, and I don't want to put you in a spot to be derogatory towards Randall Cunningham, but I have to believe there was a faction in that locker room that always looked at Randall and said, can he get it done in
crunch
time?
Well, listen, we had the best defense for 3 years in a row. We couldn't get past, we got past the first round of the playoffs one time.
Right.
I mean, you know, I can't sit there and say it was all on the offense. You know, we certainly made our mistakes in the postseason as well. But yeah, I mean, that was the thought always about our team in general was, boy, if the Eagles had an offense, they could have done some things. Again, maybe that's unfair, but that was the thought.
Mike and Mike brought to you by Sears Real-Time Price Check, Real-Time Price Checks. No regrets. Sears. Sears, a proud sponsor of the Mike and Mike Fall Football Tour on ESPN Radio, headed to Dallas Monday for the Monday Nighter, Carolina and the Cowboys. That's on ESPN Monday night. Mark Schlereth in for the hour. We'll do true-false. I have more to ask you on this, too, next. Mike and Mike in the morning.
ESPN Radio.
As we will go through some of the big questions all around the National Football League. I want to stay on this topic for a moment here. It stems from the Tony Romo discussion, but it's not limited exclusively to him. The question is, can you be a great quarterback without being a great leader? I'll ask you guys, each of you. Mark, you played on a bunch of really good teams. You won two Super Bowls in Denver. You won a Super Bowl in Washington. Was that the Rippon Super Bowl? Was he the...
Yeah.
Was Mark Rippon the leader of that team that year?
That year.
He was.
Yeah.
So that's the point. Can you be a great quarterback without being a great leader? I think the answer may be no.
I think you're probably right. I think it's probably no.
We're talking about a great for 1 year or an all-time great. There's two different things.
You have to be a leader. Right. You know, I mean, in order to win a Super Bowl, your quarterback better be a leader.
Rip was a great leader that year, but as an offense, we were so good and he was so exceptional that, you know, you naturally kind of gravitate to that guy who's making plays for you and is in charge. And I think there comes a time when you have to be the guy in charge of that huddle. And you've got to have that believability. When you walk into that huddle, you have to believe as an offense. The other 10 guys in that huddle have to believe that you're going to get it done. That when you know, the rubber meets the road, you're going to be able to put a drive together, you're going to be able to convert third downs, and you're going to be able to lead your team to victory.
But you're talking about the huddle. You're talking about something that you earn by just playing well. I'm asking about, Mike, the locker room. I'm asking about the weight room. I'm asking about a guy who other guys just sort of gravitate toward and follow, and he says, hey, guy, you know, if a bunch of guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, he's the one who tells them.
I don't think that's true at all.
I completely agree with you.
I'm not stating, I'm asking the question.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
Listen, you know, great teams have more than one great player. You know, and there's always exceptions, like Trent Dilfer wasn't the leader of the Baltimore Ravens when they won the Super Bowl, but that, you know, a lot of times I understand what you're saying, you have to have a quarterback.
I'm asking the question.
No, I know.
Does the quarterback have to be that guy?
He doesn't have to be that guy in the locker room. No, absolutely not, because you're talking about great teams that they had. You guys had a lot of leaders on that team,
right.
Guys that you know, gear toward in the locker room. You know, even when Jim McMahon was at our team, I mean, I looked at Reggie was a leader on that team, other guys that were leaders. Great teams have other leaders. I mean, you think the Patriots, certainly look to Tom Brady. But, I mean, you know, Teddy Bruschi. I mean, that guy was a heck of a leader in a locker room. Again, right. The huddle is one place in the field. But in a locker room, I don't know if it's quarterback that's all the time is the guy that's standing
up
doing
this. I'll just tell you, from my standpoint, I'm pretty sure that Dan Marino wasn't leading in the weight room. All right? I'm sure, pretty sure.
No, I was there for a year.
Right.
He wasn't.
Okay. You know, John Elway, one of the things I always said about John Elway and playing with John Elway was that even when you reach a certain level, a certain status, a certain stature in the National Football League, you're given a hall pass to not have to participate. The best thing I can say about John Elway is he never used that trump card. He always ran with the team. He always lifted. He always did those things. But was he in there telling guys what to do and how to do it? And No, absolutely not. When the rest of us were in there in our, you know, fatigues, getting ready, I mean, he'd walk in with his loafers and you know, loafers and shorts and a collared shirt right from the car dealership, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference. But when he got on the field.
On the field, a different thing.
There was no question who was in charge.
There's a difference from the locker room and the field.
So then let me see if I'm understanding what you're saying. Is what you're saying that if Tony Romo pulls them out of the fire a couple of times in a big game late in the season against the Giants, he leads them to two big fourth quarter touchdown drives and wins a big playoff game by making a couple of big plays, that changes everything.
Absolutely.
Then it doesn't make any difference whether he's this, that, or the other any other time. This is exclusively about what you do on the field.
You know, I think Troy Aikman said it one of the best ways. His decision-making has been a problem, and his decision-making, and you see his stats the last four games of the year when they're big games, he's not coming through. You need your guy to come through. Again, it's not solely on his shoulders, but you can't be a detriment and be playing that bad and being one of the reasons why it's not going well.
But just to make sure that everyone is clear on this, because, you know, you guys spent your whole lives in locker rooms. We didn't. What you're saying is that guy doesn't have to be the guy who's yelling at everybody during the week. He doesn't have to be the guy who's the unpersonal leader.
It usually isn't.
No. It's just about what he's doing on the field.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes. You know, I look to my Washington days. The great leaders on that offense were Ernest Biner, really, was probably the number one. And that offensive line. I mean, you had Joe Jacoby. You had Russ Grimm. You had the Hogs. You have Jeff Bostic. Those were the guys who set the tempo in practice. You know what?
Yep.
That's where that tempo, that's where that leadership comes from.
Exactly right.
So the quarterback just has to be the guy that everybody, including that defensive group, that's on the field in a tight game, that defensive group is saying, hey, guys, if we can get this ball turned over, our guy can
lead. Our guy's going to take us down the field.
You know what? Turn it over. Find a way.
Mike and Mark Schlereth in studio with us and our buddy Stink here. Mike, did you ever think you would see a day where I would say, you know what? Randy Moss and I have something in common.
No.
They're tough to picture.
Tough
to picture. Well, here's what it is. You guys, you in fact wrote a song about it for us once on Mike and Mike in the Morning. Stink did. Suggesting I need to man up. That's something I've been told my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Randy Moss is being told to man up. And he's being told it by Bart Scott. I like this little firing back and forth. Randy Moss, after the game in which the Jet defense really handled that New England offense, and in particular, Darrelle Revis was given a lot of credit for shutting down Randy Moss. Moss afterwards had some comments in which he gave the Jets defense credit. But he basically suggested there are no such thing as shutdown corners in the NFL, that anyone could do it if they've got help over the top. He didn't seem to be wanting to give Darrelle Revis a whole lot of credit. But Bart Scott heard of this, and here's what he said to SNY-TV, quote, I hear the easy cop-out by Moss is that anyone can play corner. Sometimes you got to give the man his credit that Revis was the better man that day. Doesn't take away from the fact that Moss is a great receiver, but Revis shut him down. Then he said, Randy was coming across the middle real slow. Tell him to man up and come across the middle like a man if he wants to be a complete receiver in this league.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts, number one, is he doesn't want to be a complete receiver in this league. Randy Moss has a unique skill set.
Yes, he
does. That skill set is 6'4" with a 45-inch vertical jump and 4.340. Okay? When you have that unique skill set, guess what? You don't have to be complete. Because you stretch the field, the things that you do are like none other. So you don't have to go across the middle. That would be like suggesting, hey, Bart Scott, man up and go out and play some corner.
Yeah, go cover Randy one-on-one.
That's not what you do from that position. It's not what you do.
Yeah.
Now, you know what?
Well, but
I'm not going to argue that Randy Moss is, to me, he's not complete, but he is legit. I mean, he,
he's a Hall of Famer, is what he is. Well,
yeah,
that's what I said
what
earlier.
Is crazy.
I mean, he read that
good.
Yeah, Greeny read that line to me, and I said, okay, yeah, right. He doesn't run across the middle, but everything else done is Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah, I mean, guess what? He said, you know what his response to that is? I don't have to run across the middle. Thank you, Bart Scott.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure. I would assume that would be his response.
Right.
Like, who was it yesterday? Mark Reynolds, the Dimebacks. So
yeah.
What?
So what?
That
struck
would be
out 26 times.
So what?
Yeah.
They should say, Randy Moss, Bart Scott says you don't go across the middle. So what?
Yeah. Randy Moss said I could probably be a cover corner if I had Brandon Merriweather over the top for the whole game, you know, help over the top.
Well, that's a stretch.
It's exactly. And I disagree with the shutdown corner. There are corners that cover man-to-man, and sometimes they don't have help over the top. Sometimes they do. You know, but there can be cover shutdown corners in this league.
Certainly, there are guys. I mean, there's nobody that can cover in this league. I don't care how good a corner you are. There's nobody that's going to cover in this league for 5 seconds. You know, if you give a quarterback that much time and a receiver that much time and you're a man-on-man, they're going to beat you. But bottom line is there are guys that are locked down. I mean, Nnamdi Asamoah, while out in Oakland, pretty much plays man every snap, and they don't even throw his way because he was that good. Deion Sanders at one time was considered that guy. Not a complete corner because he didn't want to tackle anybody. He made career decisions when it came down to making tackles, and his career choice was not to make those tackles so that he could continue to cover. So, I mean, there's a difference there. Randy Moss isn't going to get out there at corner and be that physical guy that's going to lock people up. And,
right.
And, you know, and Darrell Revis has set himself apart. He's one of the elite corners in this league. That's the bottom line.
Okay, fair enough. I thought that the comments were interesting. You guys don't seem to like the woofing. I mean, I think people like the woofing.
The first part of it was fine. The first part of Bart Scott sticking up for his teammate.
Right, yeah, give some credit to my guy.
Give some credit to my guy. The second part, again, if I'm Randy Moss, I'm saying,
so what?
So what?
Right.
So what? Okay.
But I like the wolfing because that's what's set the Jets apart right now. That's why they're 2-0. They have this newfound confidence, this bravado about them. I think it stems from their head coach, but they're no longer letting sand get kicked in their faces anymore. It's not the same old Jets. Greeny?
I know, I agree.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more. I enjoy the woofing. Mike and Mike, Mark Schlereth is in studio with us. Let's get to Michael Vick, who will get on the field, we expect, this weekend. What role will he be in his first action in more than 2 years? Sal Palantonio trying to sort it out on ESPN News.
Now, Vic gave us a little bit of a clue. He said that he is going to dress. That means he can't be the third quarterback, because if he's the third quarterback, he's not eligible to play in the first three quarters, and then one and two quarterbacks would not be able to come back in the game. So that means either Vic is going to be the backup to Kevin Cobb as a number two quarterback, or Andy Reid will dress three quarterbacks and leave himself short one player on special teams. Or forget about it. Donovan McNabb is playing and all bets are off. You got that?
We got it, Sal. Thank
you.
So there seems to be some confusion. Let me ask you guys this. There was concern that if Donovan McNabb, who's been the quarterback there for a decade, was playing, that Vic getting a bunch of snaps would interfere with the rhythm. Now you have Kevin Cobb, who's been the starting quarterback for a week as opposed to a decade.
Well,
is there greater concern for you, Mike, start with you, that if they are shuttling Vic in and out of there with a package of eight plays or whatever it is, that will interfere with his rhythm?
Well, John Gruden came on yesterday and said that he thought Cobb and Vic worked well together when Vic came in for the preseason game that Donovan didn't play, where Cobb started out and Vic came in and some. He thought they worked pretty well together. So I don't worry about as much about that as others seem to be worrying about it. I don't think it's so much a worry about him being used in that way as opposed to when he is being used. Remember, Donovan got upset because of when he was being used. They put Vic in the first series when Donovan was out there. And Donovan's point was, let's get established here. Let's get a few series in and get established and then start with that stuff. And I agreed with that. I don't think it's using Michael Vick. I think it's when you use Michael Vick.
And at that point, I think you also have to understand that there was no real package created for Michael Vick at that point. He was just going in hodgepodge, mixing a play in here, play in there, and it got them out of sync, so to speak. You know, to me, what will happen in this is he will have a package of plays that he is going to run. And you're going to put him in the appropriate situation to run that package of plays. And it's going to be three or four in a row. It's going to be, you know, create a first down, get that package back off the field. So to me, that is not as troublesome. as shuttling in and out. Hey, Mike, you've got first down. Donovan, you take second and third down. Mike, you come back in, you know, next third down. And Donovan, you take first and second. That was disrupting. And that was just a lack of planning. That's having a brand new toy and not knowing exactly what you're going to do with it, but wanting to show that toy to the rest of the world. Now they've got a week to prepare. Now they've got some planning done. They've had a lot of time to think about how they're going to use him. He will have a package of 8 to 10 plays, and it's not going to be this disruptive thing that some people think it may.
Mike and Mike brought to you by Campbell's Chunky Soup. Hearty, delicious, nutritious Campbell's, a proud sponsor of the Mike and Mike Fall Football Tour on ESPN Radio. Takes us to Dallas this Monday for Monday Night Football, the Cowboys and the Panthers. We've been doing it for years. I will make a series of provocative statements about the National Football League, and these two guys will tell me whether those statements are true or false. Here we go. Soliqua number one.
Yep.
The Titans and Dolphins will win their first games of the season this week, both of them going on the road. Tennessee is going to play the unbeaten Jets. Miami is going all the way out west to play San Diego. Tennessee and Miami win. Golic, true or false?
That is false. One of those teams wins. I say Tennessee wins. They get their first win of the year. I don't think Miami wins.
Stink.
Absolutely false, and I totally 100% agree with you. I think San Diego wins in San Diego, but I think Tennessee gets off the schneid and wins their first game.
Next. True or false? Stink. The Lions will get off the schneid and beat the Redskins this week. Remember, the Lions have lost 19 straight games.
I'm going to say false, and I know a lot of people are picking the Lions right now. Until the Lions can put together four quarters, I know it's cliche, 60-minute game, but they came out at halftime like they had won a world championship, and it like all of a sudden they just quit playing. I mean, mistake after mistake after mistake. Until they can put four quarters together, no, it's false.
Going.
That is true.
Whoa.
Detroit gets
Whoa.
Off the schneid. Washington loses to Detroit, and Daniel Snyder's top of his head gets blown off because he loses his mind.
I can't even fathom the fallout in Washington if the Redskins lose this game, but I have just too many people like it. Maybe that's the reason it won't happen. True or false with Mike and Mike next. Golic, true or false, Brady Quinn is the answer for quarterback for the Browns.
At this point, yes.
I can be your hero, baby.
A predictable response
I mean,
that was.
Taking all of your, you know, jocularity out of this thing, he still should have the job right now. You know, it's not. He's been sacked 9 times in 2 games. Some of that is holding onto the ball too long, and some is the fact that their old linemen are getting destroyed.
Stink.
Yeah, I'm going to say true for this point in time. That's subject to change, but yeah, you know, he's got to put something together. They have got to be better than they are, or that they have been. But he's on a very short leash.
Wow.
Next, Stink, true or false? The Steelers will finally get their running game going this weekend against Cincinnati.
I'm going to say true because I think they're going to make an effort and they're going to make a point of giving the ball, handing the ball off more, creating more opportunity in that regard. So I'm going to say true. They get it together this weekend.
Golic.
I'm going to say false, and I'm going to say I don't know if they get their running game going all season, and I don't know if they're now start turning to more of a passing team than a running team.
What a change. In Pittsburgh, Golic, true or false, Drew Brees is the best quarterback in the National Football League.
It's hard not to say true to that. Look what the guy's done. Are you kidding me? 9 touchdowns in the first 2 games? I mean, he is fantastic right now. He's so in sync with his offense and with his receivers and with everybody. I don't say how I can sit here and say that's not true.
Stink.
I'm going to say false. I saw what Peyton Manning was able to do with 15 minutes of football in a 60-minute game, and that guy to me is still the class of the business, and he doesn't have the weapons, and he gets guys injured, and he still wins ball games for his team. I'm going to say Peyton Manning.
Next. True or false, Stink, the Rams are the worst team in the NFL.
I'm going to say true. They are just not very good. Anyway you look at it, all the way around on both sides of the ball, they're not getting it done. They're not competing. And, you know, Steven Jackson, who's a supreme running back in this league, 17 carries last week for 100 yards. I mean, everything is a shambles with the Rams right now.
It's true. That's all they have is Steven Jackson. It's just an awful football team right now. Not much more you can say about
them. Next. Golic, true or false, the 49ers will beat the Vikings this weekend on the road and finally start getting some respect around the league.
I believe that's false. I think Minnesota is going to win this game. I think you're going to get too much Adrian Peterson. I know Frank Gore had a monster game, but AP is obviously the real deal. And as long as Brett Favre keeps playing within the system the way he's been doing, I think this team is going to be successful. I think they beat visiting San Francisco.
I'm going to say, I can't remember if it was true or false, but I'm going to say true. San Francisco does go to Miami. Well, am I right on that?
No,
true.
Minnesota.
Yeah, it goes to Minnesota, I mean. But am I right? It was true? I couldn't remember what the question was.
Either way, I think the
San Francisco 49ers go to Minnesota and beat the Vikings. This defense is ridiculous. They are getting after people. Patrick Wills, unbelievable.
He's unreal.
He is unreal. I think they shut down that running game, force Favre into not being checked down Favre anymore and making some mistakes.
I like that call. Next, Stink, true or false? Matt Ryan will throw more touchdown passes than Tom Brady does this week when the Falcons play the Patriots.
I'm going to say false. I think Tom Brady is going to look at that film. The New England Patriots are going to look at that film of last week. And the New York Jets, they'll have a plan for the blitz. Get Wes Welker back. That's the guy who keeps them in rhythm, keeps them in sync. He comes back and plays. I think New England rectifies their problems, their woes, and really starts playing like New England.
Golic.
I say false as well. Now, I don't know if that means New England's going to win the game, but I think he'll throw more touchdown passes than that Ryan. I think Wes Welker coming back is a big reason for that.
Next. Golic, true or false? Jay Cutler's season in Chicago will be much closer to what he looked like in week two than what he looked like in week one.
Oh, I think that's true. I mean, you and I both liked him as a quarterback. Now, he certainly has some issues. And, again, he's going to throw off his back foot. He's going to throw across his body. He's not going to change that stuff. It's what he does because he has supreme confidence in his arm. But I think he is closer to what we saw in week two than week one.
I agree with you. True. He is closer to that. Last week, he actually had a rollout to the right. I know he wanted to throw it back across his body in the middle of the field. He threw it to Johnny Knox on the sideline. It was incomplete. But it showed you kind of that, yes, okay, I'll play within the system. You get a little confidence, though, and you start going back to some of your bad habits. I think it's more like week two, though, for Jay Cutler than it was week one.
And one more. True or false? Someday, Tony Romo will win a Super Bowl as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Stink.
I'm going to say true. I'm a Tony Romo. I'm a believer, and I know that the leadership is a question. I know that he's got to get that rectified, but I think he's a competent, a very good, and a very exciting quarterback, and he'll give his team a chance.
Garlic. I'm going to say false, and I'm not going to say it's all on Tony Romo. That team has talent, and they just last year they underachieved, and a lot of us are calling for them to do the same thing this year, and it's not all on Romo's shoulders.
And that is another edition of True or False with Mike and Mike and Stink, and it's brought to you by Wolverine Contour Welt Work Boots. Wolverine, relentless by nature. By the way, Mark Schlereth, for most of you are aware of this, his son is a major league pitcher, so he knows baseball as well as he knows football. And with that thought in mind, I will bounce this off you next. It is the sports injury I fear most, because it could most easily happen to me. Next, Mike and Mike in the Morning.
ESPN Radio.
Now, I don't fear a lot of sports injuries because I don't play a lot of sports. So my chances of ever getting hurt are pretty slim.
You are in good shape there.
Mark Schlereth, how many surgeries did you have?
29.
29 surgeries during your career. So you know a little something about sports injuries. But here's one that could happen to me. I'm reading this one, on MLB.com. On the long list of bizarre off-the-field injuries that happen haphazardly to athletes during the course of a long season, David Aardsma's may top them all.
Yeah.
Because it is not often that a player gets hurt from reading a book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, painful.
But that's what happened to Seattle's right-handed closer after a five-hour flight to Florida, during which he was scrunched up reading a book. The position tightened his lower back, and he was not available in Tuesday's game against the Rays. He got hurt. Aardsma said, quote, "It might have been just how I was sitting with my book."
He said, "I don't know. I got there. I was fine. Then I started noticing it during stretches and stuff. It just sort of got me." What got you?
It then says, "Thankfully, the stiffness was short-lived, and Aardsma was available and ready to pitch on Wednesday."
Well, isn't that good?
He was unavailable because he hurt himself reading a book on an airplane. Now, I must say, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Stink. This is going to be tough to defend. I know your son's a Major League Baseball player. This is a tough one to defend.
Let me tell you, that's one tough son of a gun. What they don't tell you is it was a really heavy encyclopedia. That's
yeah.
Lugging that thing around probably put a little strain on that low back. Yeah, there's no living that down.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. I don't care what sport you play. If your back stiffens up from reading a book, you're in trouble.
Could you imagine trying that one in our locker room?
Oh,
in a football locker room,
coach,
you're stretching for the game, and your backside. Well, do you remember what you did? Yeah, I remember reading on the plane flight over here. I mean, you would lie so bad about that.
I was scrunched up in an unusual position.
Yeah. A lot of big words in that book really lugged me down.
Wow.
That's a bad injury.
Yeah, it is.
That's a bad injury.
That's a tough call
I would have to lie about that one and make something else.
Not doing baseball players any favors there and getting mocked.
Yeah.
All right, quickly, Mark Schlereth, you ought to weigh in. Peter Gammon's column, ESPN.com, suggesting baseball should add one more wild card team in each league. In part in order to maintain some interest this year. Obviously, maybe it's an aberration, but there's so few races in this final month of the season, and people clearly are losing interest. Right. What do you think?
Well, you know, I was listening to you guys earlier this morning while I was working out, and that resonates with me because I look at baseball right now. If you go by percentages, football being kind of the gold standard, if you will, 37.5% of teams in the National Football League make the playoffs. Okay. In the NBA, it's over 50%. In the National Hockey League, it's over 50%. That's too many. So 37.5%. In baseball, it's about 26-something, 26.5%. So if you just added two more playoff teams, you're at 30%. I think it's still a great ratio. I'm for it. I think another wild card, and I know the purists, when we put the first wild card in, you know, threw a fit. But it's been great. That wild card has been great. I don't think there's any problem putting another wild card in there. I think it still keeps a good ratio of basically teams to playoff teams to the overall league.
Yeah,
so I don't have a problem with that.
And I disagree because I think they're talking about making the change, but I don't think anything was broken. A lot of times a rule changes because you see something and you say, okay, maybe it's not working, so maybe we can do something else. This is, are we basing it off of 1 year? Give me a 10-year history of this thing and show me that it's so out of whack that we need to add another team.
I think it enhances, even, you know, it's two teams, one in each league, but it enhances and it gives another four or five teams in each league a thought process here in September that we've got a chance.
All right, we will weigh in on this in a moment here, and I got to check some of your math. We'll do that in just a minute. Stink, thanks a million. Always great to see you. Right now, SportsCenter for 2 minutes.